Boys, welcome to the show.
Indeed.
Thanks for doing this.
Long time coming.
I know. We've been talking about doing it here for a long time. This is Ron's beautiful mecca of outdoor. It's amazing, man. You guys did a great job. Is this like barnwood look?
That's what you call it? That, well, all that is contact paper. Mm. So it was too cheap to pay for barnwood.
It's all right. It's a garage. It's sweet. Can't beat a good coffee on a Sunday morning.
Nope.
Heck of a year.
That's what I was going to say. That's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast with you guys, is just to kind of go over, number one,
recap. What we did wrong.
Well, there's always that. That's going to be in there. But the big recap of, you know, what you guys did this year in the field. And for those who don't know, Ron and Jay have been part of Team BHP for a very long time. I don't know, 2010.
I've known you since high school.
Well, right? That goes back, yeah. But I try to keep these guys, like, it sounds weird, but I try to keep them out of the business side of BHP because I don't want you to get tainted by the weird crap that happens. Like, companies like, oh, I need this or I need that. Right. It's just easier to let people hunt and just do it and do your thing, because it's the most natural you're going to get when you hit the field, especially this guy. I know
right.
Years, you don't care. Like, use this broadhead. I ain't using that.
Nope. No, I'm particular.
But that's okay. Exactly. And that's what I say. It's better to keep people like just doing what you love to do and the passion. Cause I feel like if you get too tainted, like when you look at some of the outdoor programming and stuff, it's all fake. I mean, I don't want to say fake, but kind of. I mean,
it's going to
high ranches.
Cause you just know how, you know, the backside of it. So, you know, being out there and filming and doing everything kind of does taint your view of hunting shows, mm-hmm. because then you see how much work and what goes into it and how you have to almost put things together to make it look more realistic. It's not as natural. You know?
It's so funny because the first video I did for BHP was in 2009, and it was with just me and Bauer, and we were out at D4, and I purposely said, like, let's set up on an L.
Is this that climber hunt?
I think so. We set up on L, like in the field. So he sat up here, I sat up here, and we were about, I don't know, through 300 yards apart. Okay. This is state land.
That's what I'm thinking of then.
And I got on him, I saw him at full draw. I'm like, what is he doing? You know, so I left it on and you see him fire. And all of a sudden, a second later, you hear, you see this deer run out in the field. And it's just standing there. And then you see him shoot again and then get the deer. So when we first did the view, I'm like, what do I do with this footage? You know? So of course my mind started thinking like movies, and I'm like, well, duh, I could just clip him with the full draw and fire, and then it's the second shot show the impact. So what you said is 100% true. It's literally a swipe of the hand, like a magician, because you didn't see him actually miss the deer.
Right.
And then take a second shot. That's what you don't see. What you saw was one shot, one kill.
See, I'd rather see that mess.
I agree, but I didn't have it because it was the weirdest thing. Because what I had is the shot like this. And then the next thing I have is the deer getting hit, because the deer popped out. I'm like, oh, it's a deer. And I zoomed in on the deer. So now you see the deer get impacted. So I think my point is, if you told the story without saying it, you wouldn't understand what's happening.
Right.
Yeah. Unless someone told you a story like, oh, I missed the shot. I think he actually said he missed the shot in there. We shot the second shot, but the second shot looked like it was synced. Right. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom.
Right.
Perfect.
You pieced it together.
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
Unlike Ron's first video buck that you got at Change Station 20, where you shot it over your shoulder, the video, so you see everything. There's no way you can fake that. You know, it's like, boom, you know, and the deer's just, you see
that thing. Dumb luck.
That thing kicked and it was it. That was crazy. Yeah, it's funny that we got into this topic, because you're the first person I know that filmed your hunts.
That was the first time I brought
what
in
year
woods
was that?
Like 2000.
We both started real early with the
old cans. Yeah, I was going to say, remember? That was a long time, man.
We used to actually use the video cameras before trail cameras were real popular, and, you know, you'd have to develop the film. So we would use a video camera and go out there, like in the evening, hit record, and let it go till the battery died.
Yeah, I remember him. He taught me that.
He's
because once you get started, you just hit record.
You would fast forward through all the film.
He would do this in some of his hunting spots.
Yeah,
he set up a tripod in the woods prior to season.
As a trail cam.
And he'd hit record, and we'd get all excited and go out and grab it.
Go get the camera, and then just hit fast forward until you see a deer and go,
oh, man.
It was crazy.
We were looking at how they would walk in and go out. It was cool.
Tell me, Ron, how you... I want to get to Hubbard Lake in a minute, but first I want to ask you this question because I thought it was interesting. And I know you told me it before, but I can't remember. So years ago, we hunted that tin bill, whatever, road.
Yep.
And you had hunted it a few years in a row. This is on state game, no bait, nothing like that, state game. How did you make that work? Like, how did you find the deer, pattern the deer, and get on those deer? Because you did. And that's why I thought was interesting, because that's not easy to do on state land. That's, like, really hard to do, especially there's no food source.
Yeah. Well, that one, it was just, they recently did a clear cut, and everything around it was just thick as hell. And then you and I had that incident where everyone took all our stuff. So that pretty much promoted, made me start a minimum mile anywhere on state land. And then you just find crossroads, is what I call it, intersections.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically it. I just set up there. And I had a few spots to choose from, but we actually had cameras then.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they didn't take them. That was a weird year for us out there.
First theft I've ever had.
I mean, that's good advice, though, for state land.
Yeah.
Like, if you get far enough back and you can find intersecting trails, I mean, that's like deer hunting 101.
Yeah.
Where trails intersect, you know that it's going to be a good spot
because you have
multiple chances now. Instead of just that lone, heavy, beaten trail, you find two of them that come together right there, and it's like, okay, this is going to be my best shot without looking at a topo or doing a bunch of deep diving into what the heck's going on out there.
If you don't have all that. And then Wolf, our buddy Wolf, he hunts right here in Algonac, and he has monster bucks on his camera, right on the state land there.
Jeez.
But for him to get to a spot, he's got to go through two dikes and waders to get there. And that's what he does, though,
because
he doesn't want anyone around him.
And even then, a lot of those deer are nocturnal, so you go through all that work to get there, and you hunt, and you don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's like, it's a mind game. If you can somehow get out there and locate a big white oak in the middle of a thick area, like real thick, you know, poplars or something like that, that's a great spot.
Yep.
Yeah,
but it's hard to find, you know, because it's like finding a needle in the haystack, because you're just going to have to put boots on the ground to find it.
Yeah. Did you see that there's a guy online right now who's a... It's very interesting. He scouts public land with trail cameras and location markers, and he sells it.
Really?
So if you go to his website, everybody's like ripping on bad. You know, like, bull crap, this is ridiculous. He's like, he's doing the work. He's going out finding state land spots across different states that deer are coming to. And he's like, do you want this spot? You know, ping me and you can pay me for the location.
Wow.
The one fee, and it's yours. You just go and that's your.
It's smart, but.
I don't know the legality of it, to be honest, but I feel like I definitely pissed off a lot of hunters because there's people, you know, put like, this is ridiculous. This guy's the scum of the earth, you know, and all this stuff. But I thought part of me is like, how is he though? I mean, it's kind of genius really. But then I get it, but
it kind of goes back to that thing about like getting people out there though, because the weekend guys that go out on the weekends that don't have a bunch of time, they don't have a bunch of time to scout. That's the number one problem. And then when you don't have a bunch of time to scout and put in all the effort, you don't have the same outcome, so you get frustrated, and then you start not buying the license.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can have access to somebody like this that has the time to do that, to get you on deer,
it's not you're bad, still not I guess. Baiting. I mean, you pay for that.
I don't know if I agree with it. I'm just putting the other side
of it. But you do pay for like bear. If I get a bear tag, I pay Corey Merriman to bait the crap out from me up in the UP. I can't get there. It's a 6-hour drive.
I mean, it's no different than going out of state too, right?
So let's talk about Hubbard Lake a little bit. This is something that's kind of, religious for you guys, I would say. I'm trying to, you know, mimic, like, it's kind of very, it's like
home. It's holy.
It's home. It's very holy spot. Just like Deford used to be at one time, you know, for a little while. Then it got so hard. But anyway, so Hubbard Lake, you guys been going there for how long? Like, tell us a story about, I guess, how you guys started going there and how that came
about. My family's been going up there long before I was around. And so I kind of took over that tradition and carried it on with these guys when we were younger. And we've been going up there since probably 92. Together as a group, the 1900s.
Wow.
But
what the hell's that?
Yeah, so we've been going up there all this time, and it's just evolved, you know. So the property, we now have a place to stay. We just rebuilt a cabin. It's been quite the journey. We've done a lot of...
Not just any cabin.
It's not.
Your grandpa built, usually.
It's got a lot of sentimental value to us because he built it back in the 50s, and it was out of the family.
Mm-hmm.
We got it back on auction. I say we because we worked on this together. I mean, it was a group effort. And we pretty much rebuilt the whole thing, but we kept the original concept and the floor plan. Everything's identical. So for me, it was super special for my dad and for my family.
Yeah, that's cool.
Remember the auction?
Yeah, the auction was crazy.
I came over to his house for the auction. The guy keeps, there's like three people bidding on. The bids keep going back. I'm yelling, throw $5,000 at it. I'm
screaming. We went all in with like 30 seconds, honestly, and we just barely got it.
Wow.
But it was worth it, you know. I mean, yeah. But when you're throwing money out there on an auction on something that's dilapidated, essentially, yeah. it's
you know, you got to do all the work. Yeah, you're just buying the lot pretty much.
Yeah. It's nerve-wracking because you're sitting there going, oh, man, I don't know if this is...
So how does that work? Actually, you got to pay them right then and there.
You have to put $1,000 down to get into the auction to be able to bid on the properties.
Okay, so they take that.
Yeah, if you fall through on the deal, then they take your $1,000.
Got it.
It's $1,000 to get into the game, and we won.
That's exciting.
And then after that, it was like, once we, you know, secured that piece of property in that cabin, it was like all in. You're like, all right, let's come up with a timeline. Let's get this done.
You guys went there a long time, like a whole year working.
This whole summer was nonstop up there. So it kind of took away from what we normally do in the field to prep, you know, our food plots and scouting.
Yeah, worth it though, really.
But we still had a good season, so it worked out good. And actually next year with this place we have now, we have additional property in the swamp that we kind of let go that we haven't accessed in a while, but we're going to go up there and we're going to revisit that and we're going to do some pretty cool stuff back there.
And
check out that creek.
Yeah.
The Sucker Creek curls around it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that we can just take kayaks to the backside versus walking through all that.
We're going
to
do a pretty cool, you know, adventure.
Let's talk about success this year. So let's start with Jay, I guess. Well, tell us about kind of what happened, what you put down, where you put it down, what you use, you know, like all the good stuff.
So this year, coincidentally, you know, like I said, we've been going up there for years at Hubbard Lake, and it's not known for real big bucks. I mean, they're there, but it's just it's tough because it's northern Michigan, right? So we're hunting cedar swamps and acorn flats. That if they produce acorns, you have a good year. If they don't, then it's tougher. Mm-hmm. Obviously, no baiting up there, prohibited.
Always been though, right?
Yeah,
that area,
pretty much.
It was TB before. Yeah.
They've had a TB zone up there that they've been keeping an eye on. But so you're hunting more natural, and we've known the property. Obviously, hunting up there so many years, we kind of have an idea what these deer do. Just a matter of trying to figure out when they're going to do it. You know, so we were up later in October, and you know, pre-rut starting off, like pretty much kicking off, and you might catch a buck. Starting to nose a doe around, you might not, but if you do, you're lucky. So it happened to me. I got a shot at a nice 8-point end October. Actually, it was my biggest buck ever up north. Coincidentally, the same year as we did all this work.
Yeah.
Kind of like the perfect story, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the video over your shoulder?
Yeah, over the shoulder, yeah.
With the shot between the trees?
Yeah. Kinda?
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that's actually cool. Who filmed that?
Alex was in the stand.
We have this film.
That's thick.
But
I was like, how do you film that? I'm like, was he doing that himself? I didn't know if he had like a holder and you just hit record.
Because well, it's funny because we weren't set up to film, and a doe came out of the swamp and it came crashing pretty quick, and they don't usually run out of the swamp. So I thought, it's a little early for chasing, but
never know.
So then I heard a couple grunts. So I was out doe hunting, you know, that's what we go up there for. We try to knock down a few doe, and it helps manage the herd up there, and we're trying to bring those buck numbers up. But anyway, so unless it's something nice, you're not shooting a buck. And so I heard the grunt, and I said, well, I'm going to wait and see, you know. And I came to full draw, and it popped out from behind the pine, and I saw it had a really nice rack. So, but before it showed its face and it was coming, I told him, I said, video this for me. I said, get footage of this. And he's got his bow because he's thinking maybe if it comes the other way, I'm going to shoot my direction. I said, you need to video this. So he did.
He's making it out of here.
He got the camera out, and he got the footage, and, you know, it was pretty good. Over the shoulder shot. You know, the deer didn't go far. I heard it crash within probably 20 seconds. So got a good shot. I was using the G5 Megameat.
Yeah, I heard that's a great head.
I use those on both deer this year, and I love them, you know.
Yeah,
I was shooting Rage for a long time, and I had pretty good success with those.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with the G5, and he'll argue me on that because
I know, but the thing is,
everybody's different.
It's so funny because Brian from G5 was at the studio, and we were talking about, because we have that wall of broadheads, and he's looking at everything, and he's like, yeah, this one just killing it for us right now. Yeah. This mega meat.
It is.
I mean, like, if you look dead meat. And I'm like, really? Cause I mean, I don't really use that much. Like that new T2 was something that was very interesting because it's more like a Rage system. Kind of they're going to come down.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, I kind of like that. And then he's like, yeah, it's good, but it's new, you know, so it's got time to keep going. But this other one, I guess once the Havoc was gone, that was like what took over the Havoc. And the Havoc, you remember that one, the 2-blade? And so that went to town. But, you know, I don't know. I think it, personally, I actually started liking fixed blades, to be honest. The Muzzy was great. And then also the Montech is obviously, you know, tried and true broadhead. And so I've killed so many animals with the Montech. I don't know. I don't mind a mechanical, but I always want it to be a clean shot. Well, that's my only concern is I want it to be broadside clean. You know, I don't want angles. I don't want, cause I'm shooting 60 pounds. So like, I want to make sure I can get right through it, you know.
And you start throwing angles in with, you know, with the mechanicals, they do deflect.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Speaking of angles, I need the video from you on that. That's a very important video. People need to understand tree stand angles because him and I, years ago, when we shot in my grandma's backyard, so much learning in that time frame. Mm-hmm. We created deer to move across the thing because we could see. We had a cart and we pull it with, we put big stakes in the ground and mm-hmm. we pull it around the stakes so you can get the rope around without walking out there.
Yeah. Like, people almost thought we were nuts.
It was like in the woods. Dude.
Yeah.
Especially from a tree stand.
It makes bow hunting so hard. Everybody practices a broadside target
mm-hmm.
and you get real confident with that and you shoot from the ground.
I always end up with some weird shot every time.
You've taken some weird shots, dude. I took a shot a couple years back. It was COVID year. I took it. I was at the airport and I took the shot. These bucks are coming out and they're right under me and I didn't know what to do because it was standing there like 3 yards in front of me. Yeah. So I was like, well, here, I'm going for it. So I went like this. Put it between the shoulder blades, like I think this guy would have told me to do. I was thinking that maybe I'm wrong, and it should hit that shoulder. And I'm like, no, and it only went in like this far. It was an okay buck. It wasn't huge, excuse me, but I was like, dang, man. And we didn't find any, you know, we didn't find nothing from that. I even found the arrow and only went in like this far. I'm like,
it amazes me sometimes with the bows we shoot. So close, the lack of penetration you get if you hit the wrong spot.
I know that this year.
It blows your mind. I'm sitting there going, there's no way I didn't pass through that deer. Yeah. Almost like bounces off him.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. It's like
hitting. Let's see about that pig you shot. Yeah. In the shoulder.
Oh, God.
Dude, I'd never seen anything like that. It hit the pig in the shoulder and the arrow, it just dumb. I don't know what happened. It stopped. No, I think it actually slapped it.
It curled around and hit it in the face.
The pressure had nowhere to go. It hit it. It locked up and then the whole thing just turned and smacked the whole pig and it took off running. It literally went in like that far. Never seen anything like that.
That was that hollow point.
No, that was the,
wasn't that the hollow point?
No, that was that brand's gone now. The blue one.
Oh, Raven.
Raven.
It was I remember the Ravens.
Yeah.
But we killed deer with them before, I thought.
Yeah, but he had a bad taste in his mouth.
Oh, you had some issues with it before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there you go. That's why he doesn't like shooting different broadheads.
Yeah, but he, like the rest of us, if we have one successful shot with a, what you call questionable based on shoulder and all the stuff you got to worry about, and you have good luck with.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Your confidence goes up with it, and
then you go, I got campaign it. You know, my broadhead did the work, and it did what it's supposed to do. And then the next time it doesn't, you get frustrated. But, you know, no matter what you're using, if you hit the shoulder,
You could have a problem.
Most likely, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's a low percentage recovery shot, for sure.
Thank you so much for sticking around and watching the Outdoor Podcast. We really appreciate you being here. One of the brands that really help us make this show possible is XOP. XOP is making amazing hunting stands like the New Roam, the Revolt, the Fly, the Superfly. They are making great products and they are selling out fast, so make sure you guys check out XOP today. Don't forget the new Hydros. this company is changing the game when it comes to tree stand hunting and getting outdoors. They also launched a new line of packs to check out when you guys get a minute. So there it is, guys, xopoutdoors.com. You will not be disappointed. These are some of the best, most well-engineered tree stands and products in the industry. Check them out. Guys, I hope you're enjoying this great episode of the Outdoor Podcast. Want to take a quick break to say thank you to Carbon Express, one of the companies who helped keep this show going. Carbon Express offers a broad spectrum of arrow offerings, from budget beginner arrows to premium, high-performance hunting shafts with advanced carbon construction, spine control technologies. If you're serious about archery, hunting or competition, or just want quality gear, they're a strong choice when selecting an arrow. Some of my favorite arrows from Carbon Express are the Maxima Red, which is probably one of the most popular out there, but I am using the Photon today and I absolutely love it. But they do have a lot of different variety and can meet you pretty much anywhere across the spectrum of price. So check out Carbon Express today when you guys get a minute. And now, back to the show.
You were going to say earlier about the climbers of Bauer, you're talking about the headshot?
Yeah.
An accident? Yeah. So Brian was shooting
that video.
He had an eight-yard shot at a deer, and I'll never forget it because he had a... He pulled back his bow and the angle was steep enough to where the cam ended up hitting his leg. And that's what caused this. So the cam hits his leg, it bounces the bow, and then it hits it in the temple with a broadhead, with a Muzzy three blade right in the temple. And the deer,
I had a good video camera too.
And the thing took off and it ran into another tree. Like I never seen anything like it. Then it took off and then all of a sudden we're like, I go, hit it in the head. He goes, no way. I hit it right in the heart. He said something like that. I'm like, no, dude, like I'm filming it. I can see it running away. It's sticking out of the side of the head. So we go.
Were you there for that?
Yeah. So we go to recover it and it's like the thing started running in circles.
It was blind.
Yes. It was running in circles. So it was just the blood was like.
It was smashing its head into trees. Yeah.
And the blood was like a circle pattern. Like you see a scary movie. And then it wasn't there. And I'm like, where is it? We're looking around. I mean, blood's everywhere. It's not like just a trail. It's like spread out. And I look over and it's just laying there like a couple yards away, sticking straight out of that. You know, I was like, oh no, it broke it off. Remember?
It broke it off.
It did break it off.
Dead?
It was Oh yeah. I never see anything like that. I was like, wow, but it did the job technically. It still killed it.
I remember the video and you showed me it looked like someone punched the deer, like it got knocked out.
Yeah, it was like Tyson.
It's freaking
awesome. Yeah. I saw the video. It was graphic.
Very graphic. Yeah, we did post that video.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
All right, so you got the one buck. What else was there?
So ended up shooting another buck. Right? I tagged out up there, which wasn't my original plan because, you know, back home down here where we hunt, there's
giants
and. I had a whole season, you know, it wasn't even gun season yet, so it wasn't even really the height of the rut where you want to be out there. So I pulled the trigger just because, you know, I hadn't had these opportunities up there, and it was special for me. My uncle was in town.
This during gun season?
This was during bow, just before November. Uh-huh. And so the second buck, they were only a couple weeks apart.
Nice.
But yeah, because I had family in town and because of everything that was happening that year, I wanted to make some memories, and that's really cool. What's most important to me, you know, because I've got some decent deer over the years, and if you're out there and you shoot one and you're alone, it's awesome, it's great, you've accomplished something, and it's, you know, the hard work goes in with it, but there's also something special about sharing with the people that you know, want to be around.
I agree. How about you?
Yeah,
how's your year go?
This guy here.
Let's hear it.
Oh, man. I'm epic failure this year, but it was an awesome season. Early on, I shot a doe out at Train Station 20, hit it right in the shoulder, went in.
What we just talked about.
Went in 8 inches at not even 8 inches.
Yeah.
And, tractor watched her get up and run away. Then I went up there and hunted Hubbard Lake with him. Took a shot at a doe. Thing Houdini'd me. It was like the Matrix shooting at it. It turned around in another direction.
That's what we were talking about that, remember? Yep. About how, you brought that. We were talking about
that. Because I was hunting. It was that dead calm.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was too quiet. And it's too quiet.
Yeah.
No bow was going to change. What pound is you shooting?
68.
Yeah. See, this is something that's an interesting topic to me because no one talks about this, that deer can jump your string. I don't care what bow you have.
Right.
If you
had one jump you too while we were up there.
Yeah, two. You both did. I remember this because we had this conversation about it. And that's an interesting thought that when it's too quiet, the deer's senses can be fully maximized make a move.
Yeah, when they come in when it's quiet.
Even if they're not scared already. Yeah. If they're scared already, you're really going to miss, because that's...
Every deer we saw up there in this dead quiet thing, you can literally hear your own heartbeat. It's weird. It's like deafening out there. They're tiptoeing in, and I had three of them come tiptoe in. I couldn't believe I got to draw to begin with, and I get the full draw, and as soon as I get the full draw, she trots and takes a couple more strides, and she's quartering away, just what you want, and come in the last rib. By the time I shot, the deer turned around, was facing me, running this way, and I almost hit it in the face, basically. When it ran back by me.
You're talking 25-yard shot.
Yeah.
That's fast. Nice. Well, I don't even know if it was that far.
That is crazy.
And I had the same thing happen too. So it was coincidental. It happened, I think, the same day.
Who else has happened to you? Because it happened to somebody else.
It happened to you.
And this is how the conversation started. With you and me.
Yeah.
Remember the one you shot at and it...
You actually got it, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was like the first time I ever... experience that happen. That was crazy. But that was a far shot.
Man, that got the deer, though. Yards. That worked out in your favor, didn't it?
We did, but it was a terrible shot.
Right.
It turned out to be what looked like, this is where like the trickery comes in for cameras. It looked like it was a hard shot.
Right.
That's what
I thought. When
like
I saw
literally, it. Ron's like, oh, you smoked it. It's going to be, because we're playing it back in the thing. He's like, oh, it's going to be
literally. Dove right into the arrow.
But what happened is it like the weirdest spins. The arrow comes in, the deer's like, oh, hell no. Starts going like this, but actually, that's what it was. You're right. Because I shot short.
Yeah,
I spent my HHA for 43, and it was actually a 46 because it bounced out.
Mm-hmm.
And as the arrow was about to miss, the thing ducked like this and it actually hit. But the problem is, what Ron and I found out later is it hit the deer and it actually rode the cavity around and out.
It went through the skin. Thing.
Right, you skinned
it. Didn't go through the cavity.
Yeah.
It just rode it and sliced it all the way across the bottom. That was that weird rocket broadhead. Remember, there was like a new one, missile, the missile or something?
I can't remember.
I don't know what I was thinking putting that on my head. That was crazy. But anyway.
It followed that pocket and just.
Yeah, and so the thing literally did not die that night. Ron and I had to, Ron, the next day had to take care of it, but it was crazy. Like that was not,
that was the weirdest
thing. It wasn't that quiet, though. That's the thing. It was snowy.
No, they're skittish over there.
They were skittish. That's what I was going to say. If you have a skittish deer, it changes a lot.
But you know what I find interesting about all this is that you watch videos, you have your own experiences on how they react in certain when they're standing certain ways, and you try to figure out, okay, well, if it's standing like this, this is what it's likely to do.
So I thought shit ton of deer. Passed on some beer I shouldn't have and all that stuff, but...
When you say pass on your shit, give us the size range, because this is different than Michigan.
Right.
This is much different.
They were like 130-inch, a couple were...
I understand.
There was a couple that were pushing 140, but they're only like 2.5-year-olds, and we try to shoot 4-year-olds is what we try to do.
It's kind of weird, though. Like, I'm just going to throw this out there, because it's like... You are living two different mindsets, depending on where you're hunting. So when you're hunting in Iowa, you have this mindset. Just like when we went to Ohio, and the guy's like, 130 or better. So you're living this mindset. You have to freaking judge what that deer is.
And you don't have instantly. A lot of time.
And like you just said earlier about that deer, it came through. You said, I looked up, he had decent rack. Boom, right?
Yeah.
So the difference is major, because the difference in how you hunt is bigger when you, like, when I think of Michigan, like, if I look up and I see, like, a rack like this,
right.
It's going down. It's like, I don't care what size it's going down, right? But when you go to Illinois, you're thinking, well, if it's not, one of these giants.
That's a nice rack, but that's a young deer's go, too.
Because they are, you guys are in the mindset of, if we let it live, it'll grow.
No.
So there's no point of shooting if you're coming back the next year for a larger deer.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
This beautiful 9-point that I could have shot 3 times. He was the most aggressive deer I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I rattled, it came in. Hour later, I rattled, came back in. I hunted a different area out there, rattled, came in. The guy chipped down there, rattled him in twice. Chris rattled him in twice. Everyone saw this deer, but we called him Tip.
You want to be the big boy.
He came right around front and this tip crossed like this. And he's, I don't know, pushing 130, but he's only 2.5. He's just aggressive as hell.
He's going to be a beast.
But that was one of the deer we all passed on or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. All the other guys are pretty much tagged out at this point. Close to it, and I went and hunted a new spot that I never hunted, and I wanted to hunt it, and everyone's like, you gotta go there, and the wind finally shifted in the right direction, so I finally go, and I sent him a text in the morning, because it was perfect conditions. I'm like, I'm calling, I'm getting one, I'm shooting one today.
Yeah.
20 minutes later, I text him, shot one. He's blowing me up, and he's like, what happened?
Ron's a play-by-play kind of guy, just so you know.
I will say this. Hunting is like working out. It's a mental game.
Yeah.
In order to keep driving forward, you have to have somebody there to coach.
I'll push you along, yeah.
Because you're going to have somebody pick you up because you want to give up. It's so hard. Yeah. You're chasing those kind of deer.
Yeah.
And doing those long sets anyway.
And this was after sitting every day, four days.
Jeez.
And I finally see a nice buck, and it's down in the creek bottom. Curls up. He's making a scrape and all this stuff and messing around. And I actually put out scent, and I usually don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I did it is because the thermals were going down and all that. And there's one tree that's like this big around, and that's where I put it. And it's only like 6 yards away from me. And he's coming up the hill, and I already started.
This is a different deer, though.
No, this is the one I'm actually shooting.
Yeah, it's a different the one from earlier.
Yeah, this is finally shooting at something.
How big is this deer, you think?
150 plus all day long. Just a massive 10-point, 4.5, 5.5-year-old. Comes trotting up the hill, and I'm like, this is perfect, 18 yards. And like, right when I'm starting to settle him, he runs up the hill. And now I'm standing, and it's over here now. And it's at 6 yards, and I turn in the stand creaks. So the thing goes like this, just lock, you know, and they look right in your soul. It's just staring at me, and I'm going, what the hell? And that stupid tree is literally in line with his, line with his vitals. And I'm 20 feet up, but it's in a ravine, so it's like shooting 30 down.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I'm looking at him, and he's starting to do the head wobble and doing the stomp. And I'm like, oh, it's not
ready to take
off. I'm going to do it. And I had the choice of shooting the guts.
Double lung. Can you get double lung?
No. Not with the way he was standing with that tree there. Or I could shoot between the shoulder blades. And I tried it. And it didn't work.
It was too big of a deer.
And that's the thing. Like, everyone talks about, like, you can blow through with a this mechanical, that mechanical. Yeah, you sure you can.
Yeah.
And I've done it. A bunch of times. Well, not just that. When you shoot a year and a half year old deer, the shoulder, the scapular is not developed as much. When you shoot them when they're older, just like that pig you were talking about years ago, that was a giant pig.
100 pounder.
Yeah, it was stupid. But their their bone structure is different now.
Jeez.
So when I shot that thing, it went in like 6 inches.
50 inches.
And I watch it run, goes across the creek, and I call him and I tell him, he's like, you're good, it's going to be fine. I go, I'm fucked. It's a positive video.
This ain't going down, I know already.
So I wait like 7 hours, go out there and look for it, and blood everywhere, find the arrow, go across the creek, watch him get up and run away.
Worst feeling. That's like,
no, you know, it's game over.
No, this is hours later. This is like 7.5 hours later. Oh, so now I'm pouting, crying at camp and all that stuff, and I'm talking to him. He goes, what are you going to do? I go, I'm calling a dog tomorrow because it's raining right now.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Give it the best chance. I mean, it's a buck of a lifetime, right?
Hey, yo, it's the animal, too.
Yeah. I see the spot missing where he would have been.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. So this isn't over yet.
Dang, so, still going.
Here. So the dog doesn't find it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And
wait, is this getting worse? Is that what you say?
It's worse before it gets better.
So now I continue to hunt, and I got 3 days left. Sit all day, every single day, and then it comes to the last day, and Chris was ready to go home. We were all ready to go home.
Everybody's tagged out.
We got a book, man.
Can I go out in the morning? You cool that? I go, I'm going to hunt 2 hours. Go out that morning. Best hunt of my life. I've never seen so many bucks and shooters. So I end up shooting one.
Redemption.
This is the redemption part of the story. I end up, this buck comes in. It's a... I call him an 8, but he's a 9, scoring point or whatever. But he was just shy of 140, just 6-inch bases on him.
Mm-hmm.
Drawback, shoot this thing. He's croakering as I'm shooting him. Passed straight through. Mm. Was using the mega meat. I threw the other one out and put that on.
That was quick.
Yep.
I had too many. I've had, not just this season.
Yeah,
I've had
other issues. Yeah.
Other issues fixed on the way, but I shoot it, and I don't make the best shot, because I'm already in my own head from this season of being a loser. And just
trying to stay away from the shoulder blade is what you were telling me.
Yeah.
Which is,
trying to stay away from the shoulder.
I want a repeat of that first one, right?
And I went double lung, and right as I shot, he took another step, so I got like one lung, liver, gut.
Yeah.
So I watched him run off, like 15 yards, blood pouring out of him, and his tail's doing that shaking thing. I'm like, it's going to go down right here. This is perfect. And he literally shook and then just walked real slow, straight ahead. I couldn't believe it. Like, he just shook it off like nothing happened to him.
Oh, my.
So I left him bed down, and he bedded down where I actually came in. So now I can't go that way to leave. So I walk in that stupid creek for like 800 yards, and then I have to go through all these briars and thickets to get out. I'm bleeding, covered in thorns shit by the time I get out. And I call Chris. I'm like, hey, I shot one. I go, we're going to have to give it some time. It bedded down. I go, it's one long liver guts. We've got to give it like 8 hours. And he's like, all right, well, look up. I go, what do you mean look up? And I look, the whole sky is black.
Oh, so
biggest storm ever comes in, and he's like, what do you want to do? I go, well, we got to look. I go, I guarantee we're going to kick it up.
Yeah.
We go over there, get up, watch him get up and run away. I'm like, all right, let's drive home for 8 hours now after.
God.
Well, about a sick FEMA.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean, to this point, from the beginning of the season, all the way through all these difficult long sits in Illinois and everything, and he's like, I'm empty-handed.
Yeah.
He's like, this is just not right.
Two great chances. That's
right.
You know, in that year?
Yeah, they found it for me.
Oh, nice.
So I ended up recovering. It was a silver lining. It's like bittersweet.
Do you have it now or no?
It's with the taxidermist.
Yeah, that sucks.
All right, guys, good luck this year. We should have some fun. Likewise. I think.
Looking forward to it.
I think I like the idea of restarting up hunt series just as the main hunting realm. And Bone Driven will be shelved, I think, for good. Yeah. But it's okay. I think we're going to shelf that, but I like the idea of having a hunting area, you know, so I feel like Hunt Series is that area, because I feel like it always was the original, and I feel, we only separated it because we had different bow brands, but now I don't think I would do it. I think I would just use multiple bow brands, period. Everybody shoots what you want to shoot and just get content, you know, just call it a day, because it's, you know. See you guys next time on the podcast. Hope you guys learned something today, and don't miss those deer, and make sure to remember that deer can jump your string, because it does happen.